So that's a great idea. The next cheapest, about 2 million tonnes, was replacement of the peat stations with onshore wind. And in fairness, that's a good idea. Replacing the peat with almost anything would kind of... yeah, absolutely. So we have a good few things in common, as you said, Mark. Now, next is the onshore wind with low penetration. And they found that about 1 million tonnes of CO2 could be saved at a reasonable cost with low penetration of wind. The next cheapest is the nuclear. And it then is almost 3 million tonnes. It's quite a substantial amount of CO2 that Ireland could save by putting in nuclear power, and at a reasonable cost. Next after that, and a smaller quantity, is high penetration of onshore wind. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. We should be just aware that it's going to cost us. And after that then come the more expensive ones, offshore with low penetration, and a tiny bit extra for high penetration of offshore wind. I'm surprised at that. For wave energy and for tidal energy. So, where are we? The size, all I'm going to say about the size is that the large EPRs they're building in Finland are too big for the Irish system. 1,600, 1,700 megawatts are too big. There are a number of small and medium-sized reactors coming on the market by 2018 to 2020, and we should be looking at these. These are sized appropriately that they will suit the Irish market absolutely perfectly. No need for new transmission lines. We'll use the existing ones. And they're so small that they can be passively cooled. So if we lose all external power, there's enough natural circulation to cool the reactor in a safe manner. Waste, it's not a problem technically. It is solved technically. It's a problem politically. As you can see in Sweden and in Finland, they're building waste repositories, long-term waste repositories. A lot of people say we shouldn't be burying the waste anyway. It's a valuable... We only use 1% of the uranium in regular reactors. We can reprocess that, or we can use it in different new types of reactors and get an awful lot more energy out. Proliferation, people say, we can't go nuclear because some rogue nation will make a nuclear weapon. Well, I'm afraid whether Ireland goes nuclear or not has absolutely no impact on what that nation's going to do. They have the technology, they have the ability to make a weapon whether we go nuclear or not. And on the point of view of whether you can crash a plane into a nuclear reactor and turn it into a bomb, that is not possible to do that. You can crash the plane into a reactor, but it cannot explode. It's got low enriched uranium. You need high enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon. They actually did an experiment of crashing a plane into a simulated containment building, and they found that most of the energy was dissipated in the destruction of the plane. It's not the threat that you might think, and we can go into that in more detail afterwards if people want. And on the emissions point of view, I think Mark has accepted that nuclear energy is low carbon.
For the sake of the argument.
Well. For the sake of the argument, you're in good company here. The IPCC have also agreed. They say this is in grams per kilowatt hour or per unit of electricity. Coal about 1,000. It's very dirty. Peat is actually more dirty. Gas is around 450 to 600. Oil somewhere in the middle. And these are the truly low carbon technologies that we have to be looking at. Not just remember from the point of view of taking the carbon out of the atmosphere, because nothing is going to do that. Any amount of nuclear power stations or any amount of wind turbines will not take the carbon out of the atmosphere. The only way to do that is by carbon capture and storage. So it is there. But from the point of view of what do we do when the fossil fuels are gone? We still have to survive. And we see hydro, solar, wind and nuclear. They're all there. So I think I'm trying to summarise the case by saying that most of the problems with nuclear, I think nuclear is an essential part of the solution. It's not the only one. But the most of the problems with nuclear power are perceptual. And I think it's in all our interest that we can find a way to get over these perceptual problems. It is the safest, it's the most affordable large-scale energy source. The size is ideal for Ireland, particularly in about 8 to 10 years' time. And we could find a niche for ourselves in building some of these and helping other small countries to develop the nuclear power that they're going to need when their fossils are gone. Proliferation, the issue, I think, is irrelevant to Ireland. The waste matter is solved and the emissions are the lowest. And I finally say that the fear of nuclear power, I think, puts more people at risk than nuclear power itself. So we're going to have a huge increase in energy use. It's expected and it's needed. It's going to happen. We better face up to it. The challenge of the environmental response is absolutely enormous. And we need all sensible means. Increased efficiency, renewables, as much as we can get our hands on where appropriate, more hydro and particularly solar if it comes about, carbon capture and storage, and finally nuclear fission. And if we can manage to do it, there are a number of projects on the way, nuclear fusion, it may well help save the planet more than anything we individuals can do. So thank you very much.
Speech did take a lot longer than Mark's, but that was a single presentation from the Benny people. So we'll move on to James from Friends of the Earth. Do you want to you want to go up here?
Sit here, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have a short presentation, folks, as well. I haven't really thought about the nuclear debate for a number of years. I've been friends here for a year and a half now, and it hasn't really featured on our agenda, but thank you for giving me the chance to go back to my roots. Nuclear power, I think, is a form of energy that's inherently dangerous and will remain dangerous for many, many thousands of years. And even though it's still supported by the Vatican, I remain a very strong nuclear supporter. I'm a strong nuclear denier. I think I'm a pragmatist. I think I'm interested in technology. I'm interested in biofuels from algae. I'm interested in renewables. I'm interested in electric cars, perhaps even thorium reactors. But I think, looking at the current evidence, that I'm an ardent nuclear dissenter. I think there's problems with earthquakes and tsunamis around the world, but certainly in Ireland we have a problem with terrorist threats. We have a problem with rising sea levels, problems with sea surges. The Union of Concerned Scientists in the US said that a successful terrorist attack on an average nuclear reactor, would create 40,000 deaths from acute radiation syndrome and 500,000 from cancers within a 50-mile radius. If you take the problem of waste, I think we're passing this on to future generations, and personally I find it morally repugnant. We can talk about externalising costs, but I think morally passing that our crap on to future generations is something that we shouldn't tolerate. Who's going to be responsible for this in the future? I don't know. Britain has 10,000 tonnes of high-level nuclear waste. It's increasing all the time, and yet we still can't find a site where to put it. I think nuclear is also impractical for a number of reasons. The opposition will be huge, and even the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher herself, promised 10 nuclear reactors in her time and only got one through. I think there's a problem in that they go over budget, and there's also a problem that they'll only be built if the government underwrites huge taxes, tax incentives and loans. Billions of pounds are currently spent propping up this failed economic system, which is a nuclear industry. Finally, I just want to explode another myth, which is that they're neither renewable nor green. If you add the three phases of nuclear development, the mining, the construction, and the operation costs, it's estimated that a reactor would have to work for something like 10 years before it creates a net unit of energy because of the problems of mining, transportation, construction, operation. Add to this that the building of a reactor produces around 20 million tonnes of CO2. Add to that the 30 million gallons that are needed every year to stop the reactor overheating, and the vast amounts of money in fossil fuels that are needed to decommission the plants. I think all this debate about decommissioning and reprocessing and waste management is a financial and safety time bomb that will explode for future generations. And bear in mind that uranium is a finite resource. Uranium is, some say it's peaked in around the 1990s. Few countries have access to it, like Canada, Australia, Kazakhstan, and Russia. There are geopolitical problems with accessing that raw waste, but should we really be building nuclear power plants dependent on a fuel that may not be around in 20 to 30 years? I think it's folly. Uranium mine that you see in the picture here in South Australia is the biggest consumer of electricity in South Australia. Most deposits of uranium were found in concentrations of 0.01%. In other words, 100,000 tonnes of rock need to be milled, need to be mined to produce one tonne of uranium. And a typical reactor needs about 150 tonnes a year. Huge diesel-powered machines are needed to crush the rock. Acid is required to leach out many harmful materials like arsenic and lead. And the enrichment of uranium after this process requires huge quantities of fossil fuels and releases into the atmosphere very toxic gases such as fluorine. And cancers have been attributed, in many cases, to the mining sites in Australia. But it's on the nexus between civilian nuclear power plants and the relationship with the weapons industry that a Swedish physicist, Hannes Alfvén, said that the peaceful atom and the military atom are like Siamese twins. The Oxford Research Group said that of the 60 countries that have civilian nuclear power, around a third of those have used civilian nuclear power as covert operations to develop nuclear weapons. So I think that the champions of nuclear power are trying to rehabilitate this dirty industry using climate change and, most importantly, climate fear to justify their claims. And I think there's three issues that we need to tackle here. First of all, the Committee on Climate Change in the UK has said that 90% decarbonisation of our electricity in the UK is certainly possible, but building nuclear plants, the 8 plants that have been promised by Tony Blair's government over the next 10 to 20 years, will be a very dangerous distraction. Nuclear misdirects resources and it distracts governments. As well as that, another reason to claim that nuclear power will help win the battle against climate change is that nuclear can only really be used to generate electricity, and only about a third of our greenhouse gases responsible for climate change come from electricity. If nuclear output was doubled by the year 2050, it would only reduce greenhouse gases by about 5%, an insignificant fraction to what's needed to avert catastrophic climate change. And finally, in terms of the building of more reactors, this would create a huge spike in emissions of CO2 at the very time that we need to do a serious U-turn. Okay, so what's the solution? I think the way in which we produce energy, as we know and has been admitted by the group here, is not working for people or the planet. The United Nations Environment Programme say that we are on course for 5 degrees warming of the planet unless we have an urgent change in direction. I accept totally that the health implications from smoke inhalation of using biomass, dung and timber throughout the world is a massive problem, more serious than malaria, and is something that needs to be tackled. And that the black carbon and ozone that's created by the burning of biomass is a massive contribution to climate change as well. But issues such as North India and Niger are very typical. Here we have very large electrified coal plants and communities around these coal plants that have no access to energy. The solution has to be in providing decentralised energy, a decentralised model using renewables for communities that are most in need of clean energy access. And we need a very, very radical shift in our energy supply to do that. So how do we do that? 2012 is the year of sustainable energy for all, and access to clean energy is absolutely key to tackling poverty. There are many successful small-scale examples of renewable projects, and IPCC research, which has been quoted earlier, shows that renewables can easily deliver, at a human scale, 80% of all our global energy needs. But finance is the absolute key to all of this, especially for developing countries. Feed-in tariffs were a very successful scheme that have been used locally across the world to generate micro-renewables. What we need now is a global feed-in tariff scheme that provides the upfront capital to invest in the most socially and environmentally appropriate technology, and that has to be renewables. According to the UN, investing $100 billion a year for 10 to 15 years would make renewables cheaper than fossil fuels, and it'll be the default choice for energy generation across the world. As well as dealing with climate change, this would release a huge amount of investment and jobs. Other sources for this global feed-in tariff fund could be a global financial transaction act, carbon taxation, and the redirecting of bank donations from, for example, the World Bank. The Environment Audit Committee in the UK has stated that £2 billion every year is spent globally from British aid supporting nuclear industry and dirty coal industry across the world. That money, with all these other investments, could be redirected to this key figure of about £100 billion to kickstart this green energy revolution. And finally, we can easily reduce our energy needs in the West by about 30%. I just want to read out a figure. 30% of the UK's total energy supply is dumped as waste heat and hot water from power stations. And this loss is about 10 times larger than the amount of energy currently produced by nuclear power in Britain. And I think the answer in Northern Ireland is certainly to start with initiatives like the Green New Deal to kickstart jobs, to kickstart a meaningful contribution to climate change, and also to insulate houses by reducing our energy efficiency. We're barely using our natural resources. And I think to keep the lights on in Britain and Ireland and across the world, we need to invest in a diverse range of renewable resources with combined heat and power technologies, as well as the scaling up of energy efficiency. But the crisis of climate change, for me personally, is a murderous intent in the world. And I think one of the accomplices in this murderous intent, and complicit in this murderous intent, is the nuclear industry. And I think that the nuclear industry needs to look at itself very carefully, reflect on all the challenges for the future, reflect on the huge investments that it needs, and seriously have a wake-up call that if we want to deal seriously with the planet and deal seriously with the people, we need to reject this nefarious, ugly, and nasty technology. I just want to finish with a line that I keep repeating at the minute, and it was a line that was used by William Butler Yeats to refer to a crisis in Ireland about 100 years ago. And he said, and I think it's very pertinent now, that we seem to be living in a time when the best lack all conviction and the worst are full of passionate intensity. And when I think of the nuclear industry, I think of that line all the time. Thank you very much.
Well, I'd just like to thank everyone who spoke today. I'm going to open up for questions, but I am aware that we will be running over slightly and eating into Stephen's speech. But we've all heard Stephen's jokes before, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. So do I have a volunteer to help with the roving mic? And does anyone have any questions?